Hello, America. Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Always good to be with you. And we've got a really terrific show for you here. We have one of my favorite economists, Bob Kudla, on the show. He's from Trade Genius. He's a guy that he's in the market and he sponsors people in the market. And you know what happens? They win two out of three of their trades. And we're going to talk about the economy from his perspective and what he thinks is going to happen. And we're also going to talk about silver lining opportunities for people that exist within the system. Yeah, there's some people out there, they know how to play the game. They know that when things are volatile, they got to get in when it's right and get out when it's right. And Bob's going to talk about that strategy and the algorithms he's created. Hey, I wanted to let you know, we're really exploding in our listenership, our viewership. We do have a really good TV show over at thecommonsenseshow.tv. We bring in expert guests, all designed to help you navigate what's going on. And they're experts in their field. Many of them have been through regime change activities in foreign countries. And as a consequence, they recognize what's happening here and they can tell you what's going on, how to plan. And so I really want to direct you over there, thecommonsenseshow.tv. We're getting five-star ratings on the world's major platforms, and it's censorship and commercial free. That's thecommonsenseshow.tv. Also, too, we're on all the podcast services, and right now, if you just toot the horn a little bit, we're in the upper one half of 1% of 3 million podcasts as rated by the service Listen Notes, and so we're doing well. And what we're going to ask you guys to do here is to help us even increase our reach more. And it's not that we're being greedy. It's that we need to reach people because we're running out of time to turn things around. We have a hardcore group of people, of Americans, that are standing up right now like never before. But unfortunately, we have a lot of people that know what's going on. They have a fairly good idea, and they choose to remain ignorant. And they think they can run from the problem. And if they just won't say anything, no one will ever bother them. And nothing could be further from the truth. The banks are getting ready to really have trouble, and they are going to have trouble. And ladies and gentlemen, the government's cracking down. Biden is seizing control of the internet, and he's going to hand it off to the UN. We've done some live streams on YouTube on that. Even the FCC chair, democratically appointed, liberal to the hilt, even he is saying, and he being Brendan Carr, is saying, hey, we can't do this. This is like communism. This is terrible. Biden, I don't care. I'm sure this guy will get fired as the head of the FCC. And the UN is coming out and talking about what they're going to do to basically close down the internet. And you say, what? Oh, yeah, yeah. And they're going to close it down to anyone they don't want on there. Journalists are going to have to register. And they get to decide what's what, and you can do nothing to cause any anxiety, any disruption whatsoever. We've spent two nights on this, and we're going to do a third night here pretty quickly. And then we're going to talk later in the week about our education system was just up a creek without a paddle. There's some good schools that you need to keep your kids in, absolutely great teachers and administrators and school board members, but the majority of them, no. No, you need to rescue your kids. And we're going to be talking to you about that as well, too. Hey, look, share this work far and wide because we come to you largely on digital platforms. And so we do appreciate you doing that. In the meantime, we want to welcome you. Thank you for joining us. Hope you enjoy this interview. It's filled with fact-filled information that I think will guide you. And enjoy. Bob Kudla coming up next. Hey, Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. Thank you so much for joining us. And as we see the economy take all these twists and turns, I wanted to get Bob Kudla from Trade Genius back on the air. You guys really were complimentary of the information that he put out a few weeks ago when we last had him on. And certainly things are, in some cases, going from bad to worse. But there's always a silver lining, and we're going to hit some of those silver linings to your benefit. And gentlemen, so here, let me adjust equipment right here. We should be good to go. Okay. All right. Anyway, just love the technical stuff. But Bob, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us. And I'm getting tons of information on the economy, and most of it's negative. And I think you think we're probably pretty close to having a recession formally declared.
Just so people know, too, my view on a recession, you and I are probably similar, is if growth rate is below the inflation rate, we're contracting. Even though the numbers might be higher, it's kind of false information. But the information that we're starting to see this week is that they're going to probably officially announce October as the official start of the recession, because they look at an unemployment rate. If people are unemployed for X amount of period of time and that rises by 15%, then that's an official, officially a recession signal, and it's at 28%. Really, what I'm saying is that people are getting unemployed and they're not getting rehired. And that's kind of scary because the cost of living is not going down. People are up against the wall, and I think things can get really mo fugly here going into next year, because people are going to get increasingly angry.
Yeah, that's interesting you'd say that. I just did a YouTube yesterday on the increasing aggression angers in the general population. Yeah, because the times are so uncertain. The people are volatile as much as the economy. But there's always silver linings, but we'll get to those in a little while. But I wanted to bring up a couple of things here that has happened. Moody's did a tremendous downgrade of the U.S., and they attached even a negative term to it. They called our credit rating negative.
It's, these are kind of weird things because, the United States can't go bankrupt, okay? Just because we're the reserve currency and we initiate debt in our own dollars. That doesn't mean bad things can't happen. So the Moody's thing is really kind of a, it's more like a scold, if you will. And what it does, though, is that it will cause interest rates to rise. And our view on this is that we think there's a war going on between Janet Yellen at Treasury and Jerome Powell at the Fed. So Janet Yellen has been playing this game where she's been borrowing money, really what's called short end of the yield curve, and they're called T-bills. When you do T-bills, is it still allows a lot of speculation in the markets, but the Federal Reserve wants to have a positive, they want to have a positive, what's called yield curve, so that the banks can get liquefied. But she's causing a lot of grief there, because the more these T-bills she tries to sell, the higher the short end of the curve gets, and it's called an inverted yield curve.
Yes.
And so she's basically, what she's doing is she's being a grasshopper. She's eating for today instead of being an ant and saving for tomorrow. And even Druckenmiller said, called her an idiot, because we could have locked in 30-year rates at 2%, 2.5%, and kind of pushed our way through the baby boom bubble, if you will. But she didn't do that. They just kept everything really, really short, really, really short. Because what she was trying to do, that money goes back into the stock market. So they're creating this feedback loop of everything's great, look at the stock market kind of a thing. And now we're in a situation where she's basically a gambler and interest rates are going higher and it's causing us grief. Well, I think Jerome Powell probably whispered in Moody's ear saying, "Hey, we got to get people's attention on this debt." And then, he's going to continue with his QT, and he may even raise rates one more time in December. I mean, so we have a war going on here. It's a big problem, because obviously the Treasury wants to get reelected, and Jerome Powell has a different mandate in terms of protecting the banking system. And liberals don't care about that stuff. All they care about is their power. And so they don't care if everything blows up over there, because then they could say, "Hey, we need to even take even more control over the situation."
Absolutely.
And then you end up
Yeah.
like a Venezuela kind of a situation.
Well, yeah, we don't want to end up there. With regard to the inverted yield curve, just for the audience's edification, we're looking at long-term interest rates are higher than short-term.
The other way around.
So, I mean,
Short term,
yeah, exactly.
yeah.
Sorry,
I know what
yeah.
you mean. Yeah, short term interest rates are higher than long term.
That's what I
And
meant.
as right, and as that settles back to flat, that's another indication of going into recession. And they can't really raise rates anymore. If Powell does it, he's doing it because he's trying to prick the balloon here. And but we don't really know where this will go because everybody's so levered right now across the board that you don't know, you know, when you pull the last Jenga thing out, the whole thing comes down.
Yeah, you have to wonder how far this is going to go. I mean, let me just give you one thing that we didn't talk about in our pre-air that concerns me. Biden ordered $45 billion to be used for vacant commercial real estate transition into livable spaces in home real estate. And that concerns me on a number of fronts. What do you make of that?
Well, they're trying to, number one is they're trying to, you know, keep the banking system from collapsing. So if somebody's getting paid off so that those properties aren't basically worthless, you know. The other thing too is that they sent all these illegals into these cities and they need a place to put them.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So they have that's kind of the twofer there. They just don't know where to put these people. The problem is that these properties, the way they're built, it's very difficult to convert these into residential properties. So it's going to be, whatever they do, most of these properties are going to be a hack job. But, you know, it's basically, you know, they have a tin cup trying to bail out the Titanic at this point, because commercial real estate is literally collapsing across the board. I mean, in San Francisco, I think they're at 33% vacancy rate now, which is just, those are depression levels. And so, and they're the kind of tip of the iceberg. So, you know, WeWork just went bankrupt. They had, I want to say, six or the 16 towers that they've rented out. They're just walking away from their leases in, you know, downtown, you know, Manhattan, Brooklyn, you know, Queens area, gone. You know, these people are not getting any money. When you declare bankruptcy, they just walked away from their leases. So it's going to get worse and worse, but that's what they're trying to do. And, you know, in the scheme of things, I mean, $45 billion sounds like a lot of money, but you spread it across the whole country. Remember, when you build one of these buildings, they're $1 billion, right? So trying to convert them, what are you going to do? Convert like 90 buildings? You know, it's hardly totally a drop in the water.
Well, I noticed a trend with the distribution of the resources as it was announced. It was very general, but I got the sense they were just giving the money to blue cities like Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, you know, nothing for red cities. That's how I saw it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. You know, and hopefully this next, you know, budget won't have as much slush fund money in it, you know, because they build all these slush funds into these budgets. So we'll just see how it plays out. But that's why they're doing what they're doing. But it's not going to be enough. And, you know, look, you're talking 2 to 3 years before they can convert these properties. These are not easy things to do.
Yeah, they put all these climate change restrictions on the properties, too, I noticed. They weren't real specific in the press release from the White House, but it did say they had to be climate friendly. Well, that's expensive, and yeah, That'll drive the price up. Yeah. And if you're trying to create cheap housing, I don't know why they're adding expense to it. But anyway, that's another deal. The other thing I wanted to ask you about that's not really on the list, but it's in the news again now, the possibility of a government shutdown. And with Mike Johnson being the Speaker of the House and not Kevin McCarthy, I think this is a real possibility. I think the tie-up is going to be Israeli military funding versus Ukraine military funding. I think that's going to be a big issue. But what happens if we do have a government shutdown? What will happen to the economy?
Yeah, so when you have a shutdown of the government, basically what it means is that it's really a number one, it's a borrowing thing. You can't borrow. And number two is that only mandated programs can be continued. So Social Security, Medicare, Defense Department, security arrangements, everything else gets shut off. You know, so it'll slow the economy down short term, but it's more of a political nightmare. But it's for people that have, everybody gets furloughed, by the way. So the IRS gets shut down, the human resource, HHS gets shut down, just things that have to run, everything else gets shut down.
There's a silver lining in every cloud.
Yeah. Remember, they usually shut the national parks down and this, that kind of crap. They'll close the mall. They do petty stuff like that.
Yeah, they want to make it uncomfortable so people put pressure on to get it through. I agree.
No passports, no visas, that kind of stuff.
Will it have a general effect on the economy, though, people's day-to-day life?
No, not really. In fact, we won't miss it at all. It's just that people that are heavily dependent on government programs may be inconvenienced, but I don't think it'll be a very long one. Mike Johnson also, he dangled out a continuing resolution with some strings. So So we'll see where that goes. But typically these don't have long-term effects. It's just depending on how they're positioned and the narratives created. These are really more like political grandstanding.
Yeah. Okay. So they're playing politics for the election. I hear what you're saying. You said something to me before we went on that I hadn't heard, and that has to do with FedEx drivers. Tell the audience about that.
It's actually FedEx pilots.
Pilots. Okay. Pilots.
Yeah. The pilots were told, these are contract pilots. They usually pick up for the holidays, because you get a peak season. And they said, basically just, get work with the regional airlines, because we're not going to have enough routes for you. And I don't know if you noticed too, Air American Airlines just basically abandoned Austin as a hub. And they're not the only ones. We also talked about Maersk, laid off 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas is going to be pretty bleak. This stuff should have already been in the country. But Maersk laid off 10,000 people. That means that the shipping is way down. Only thing really moving right now that you can make money on shipping is anything energy related. So all the container companies are hurting for certain. We're laying off truckers left and right. Trucking companies are going bankrupt left and right in this country. So it's a big problem.
Yeah, that let's get into that, because I've looked at that. I know rising diesel prices could be a real problem, because I've had truckers tell me they won't run if it's between $6 and $7 a gallon because they can't make money. But what does this mean for trucking in general? Is this a general trend we're going to continue to see, or is it dependent just on diesel prices? How do you see this?
There's just not enough loads. So so it's just going to be it's general malaise. So the recession, in my view, is that, Maersk is the oldest shipping line in the world, and their largest, I think. And if they're laid off that many people, there's a problem. And so that's the front end of the sword. Unemployment rates, the low is the back end. The front end is shipping. So if you're not shipping stuff, that means people aren't buying stuff, and it just floats its way through. And on the services side, we're ending up in a bifurcated environment. Things that you have to have, you're going to spend money on. Things you want to have, nobody's buying. And so we talked about this before. So if you're in an industry that is in what's called a non-essential services environment, you might be in big trouble here next year, because nobody's going to be buying your stuff.
By non-essential, do you mean things like, essential would be like medicines and food and, right? But what would non-essential be?
Travel, massages, kids clubs, camps. You go up to a mall and you walk through the mall and you say, I'm not going to get LASIK. I'm not going to, maybe I not get braces. I'm not going to get teeth whitening. I may not get liposuction. I may not get massages. I can't go to the nail place. My daughter's a stylist. I may push off an extra week before I go back to get my hair done. All that kind of stuff. Travel, you're already starting to see it. Airbnb starting to deflate. So people aren't going to travel as much because they can't. It's very expensive. So those are the kind of things you look at. And then, I was going to remodel my house. I'm not going to remodel my house now. I can wait. Or I'm maybe just paint it versus tearing it out, putting a new bathroom in, stuff like that. And it just be, and you have to remember, 70% of the economy is services, right? And probably 70% of that is non-essential services, just things you want to do versus going out to eat. Okay. That's a that's a non-essential service, okay? And so you're just going to see all that collapse.
Well, there's a related figure I report on a lot. 65% of American families are living paycheck to paycheck. So and in fact, 82% of those have dipped into their savings for essential services. So we're really in trouble. So I want to come back to some of these other things, but I want to take kind of a halftime here, and I don't want people to get out the hankies yet. Let's give them a little hope. Is there any silver lining here amidst all this negative news?
I mean, well, depending on what you mean by silver lining. So if you have cash and you can get 5% on your money and without any volatility risk, right? Because the T-bills are trading at 90-day monies at 5% plus. So that's number one. Number two is when a recession happens, you can shift more into the bond portfolios and you're going to make money on stock like TLT, because it rises in principal value at the same time you're collecting a dividend. And there's some really interesting things happening. People don't realize the United States is the largest producer of oil in the world. We're the largest energy producer in the world. We're the largest user of nuclear power in the world. Okay. I think we're the second or third largest producer of coal in the world. And we're the largest exporter of natural gas in the world. All those things are going to make money. Okay. Because in the United States, all those energy components are cheaper here than they are in Asia and Europe. And those are essentials. And so we've been actually exporting liquefied natural gas. And I was telling you on the show here, because you're talking about, hey, the Panama Canal is having big problems. Well, part of it's because of the economy, but the other part of it is they're having a major drought there. Well, we had a stock that we've been watching. We bought it at 19, we closed it at 38, called LPG Dorian. They ship liquefied petroleum. Okay, they can get their boats through. They're raising their prices, and that's a long-term play. So that thing doubled in less than a year, and they still pay a dollar dividend. They're at 37. I let it come back to 35. I bought it again, and it pays a dollar dividend every quarter. So it's a $4 stock for $35 stock. It's 11% dividend yield. So there's a couple of those kind of plays out there. Liquefied natural gas, FLNG, which is a shipper of liquefied natural gas. Another one pays a huge dividend, pays 89 cent dividend, paying at the end of the month. Again, this stock's a $30 stock that's basically paying $4 dividend a year. These are double digit dividends in an environment that's a recession, because you have to have it. So those are the silver linings we do. And as you know, Dave, we have an algorithm that just tells us what to buy and sell. So
Yeah,
we,
at Trade Genius, you have an algorithm that picks up things like LPG Dorian.
yeah, so we don't really, I hate to use the word, we don't really care, but we really don't care. So all we do is we just look for our indicators to tell us that it's time to buy. And what we've done is we've had multiple algorithms and we combined them into a new and improved one that's actually, it's a super algorithm, because we combine dollars together and we've created the signals within it to tell us whether or not it's a high probability trade. It's called the trade force indicator. We call it the worm. So when you see the worm, you buy. When the worm goes away, you sell. And it's just been killer. And we've really, really enjoyed it. When somebody says, well, I don't know how to trade, I'm like, well, just follow the worm. As the worm turns, we like to say. So you see that, you take a look at it and it just sets your trades up. We teach you how to use it. We give you access to it. No matter what level of service you buy, you get access to the trade force indicator. Really cool. So we combine all our algorithms into one major one, and we wrote some specific code around it, and it has really high probabilities of success. And so you just have to simply wait. It keeps people making the mistake of, am I missing out on the trade and buying something that's not going to go up? Or if you're not paying attention, you can set an alert on it and it'll just tell you when it's time to buy again. So, and Dave, so I added that to the Black Friday specials for us.
Okay, so at Trade Genius, I just want to encapsulate this for the audience here, because with the midst of all this negative information, there's still good opportunities within the volatility. And you've developed these algorithms, correct? Is that right? Are these Bob Kudla algorithms?
Yeah, we own them. They're Trade Genius algorithms, and so yeah, so we own them, and you get access to them as long as you're a client of ours, and they're really good. And what we charge for service is nothing, what you get out of it. And Black Friday is now, it's time, best pricing of the year. You essentially have 2 weeks to steal a year's worth of service from us at a really great price. And Dave, just go to Dave Loves Trading. I put them onto your into your room for you.
Yeah, we've had a long-term relationship, and the reason I like to do business with you is I get rave reviews from people when they come over. Let's talk about things like how you've done historically on trading. Can we give some historical figures so people have an idea that how good this algorithm is?
Yeah, so let me pull it up as of today. Bear with me 1 second. Gotta find out where I put it. Here we go. So as of today, we're at 66.41% win rate. Our annualized gain is 82.8%. And our average hold period is 3 days. And we've just had a really nice run of trades here. And we're positioned now for the end of the year with some good trade setups.
3 days for holding is really short, isn't it?
Well, in this
Compared to the
environment,
market, compared to the market.
yeah, I think, well, there's three kinds of traders out there. There's day traders, there's swing traders, and there's investors, right? So we're on the shorter end of the swing trade just because of the environment. The algorithms that are out there today aren't allowing you to have these, occasionally you get a move like Nvidia, where it just goes to the moon. But most stocks are down 17, 18% for the year. So you have to be, the term we like to use, you have to be like a seagull, right? You gotta let the big fish bring up the bait fish, and then you go ahead and you attack it. You can't stick around. So you have to understand, if you make 1% a week on your money, you're making 50% a year, Dave. Okay, so you don't have to stick around very long. And if you're winning more than you're losing, and you're winning more money than you lose when you lose money, your portfolio grows. And that's how our system works. And it's been very consistent. In fact, we've moved up from 63, 64 to 66%. And that's saying something, because we're looking at hundreds and hundreds of trades. So it's harder and harder to move the needle, but we've been grinding up higher and higher over time. Our systems are getting better. And this is environment. Look, this whole last year, the market's down. Okay. If you look at what's called equal weighted stocks, they're down 14, 18%. Just because the top seven stocks are up. Most people don't just own the top seven. They own everything. If you ask, look at everybody's portfolio around the country, people's portfolios are down. I have family members that have their money professionally managed, and they're down for the year. Well, we're up for the year because they have a broad-based, allocation of stocks, and a lot of stocks are not doing well. And if you own a company that's not cash flow positive, in the next 18 months, they're going to be out of business, or they're going to have to severely dilute the value of their shares to gain cash to try to maintain a survival mode. So that's kind of where we are. So I really don't care. You get in a trade, you stay in at three, average of 3 days. Some days are 1 day, some days are seven, and you trade and you move on. And so that's all we do. So I really don't care. I don't look out months and months in advance. I look at macro. I want to know where we are. But today, if a trade pops up for me to buy, I'm going to buy it, and I'll be out of it by Thursday, Friday, most cases.
I've been approached by other people who do something similar to what you do, and I've turned them down, and I'll tell you why. They brag to me that their win rate is 48%, 52%. I mean, I've heard these stats, and I'm saying, okay, that's not bad, but you're breaking even, but 66%, you're winning 2 to 1. That's the one thing that I think people need to see here. Is these opportunities there? Is it true? I learned this in history class when I was in college, that more millionaires were created in the volatility of the Depression than before the Depression or after the Depression.
Yeah, they didn't make their millions in the Great Depression. They started their businesses in the Great Depression, and they basically were the phoenix that rose out of the ashes.
Okay, all right. Because to me, what that says, though, is there's that silver lining within this very big gray cloud that's overtaken America. So people can still profit and do it legitimately. I think that's really good. I want to go to something else, though, that I think could have a real dramatic effect on our economy, is go back to, you talked about LPG, Dorian, getting through the Panama Canal, and it's a great deal for you, and you get a 55% return in 6 months. But I'm talking to people on the ground in Panama in general. The people aren't working. The nation's on strike. They've had the roads closed. The military's had to reopen them. The people are really pissed because the Chinese seem to be taking over everything there. It's like a mini Belt and Road going on with the mines and the mining that's happening there. And I'm worried that even though there's winning trades for trade genius, the overall effect for America with 40% of our imports coming through the canal could be really bad. Are you concerned? And how long would it take for this to show up if you're concerned?
Yeah, so I'm not overly concerned because we're doing a massive reshoring right now of our industries in the country. So in China, as you know, and look, I've been proven correct here. Ch China is a the paper tiger, and in China they're in big trouble over there. So we've shifted a lot of manufacturing from China to Vietnam to India
Right.
to Malaysia and so on and so forth. And right now, if you notice, China's foreign investment went negative. So more money's leaving the country than coming into the country. So they're really hurting. And Xi is took a really hard line stance here with how he sees China vis-a-vis the rest of the world. And so I would imagine that there's going to be some internal strife in China. And if we load off some sort of they bought a lot of food and they bought a lot of energy in storage because they're expecting bad things in the next 2 years there. So I'm less worried about China doing anything. Every China investment they've made around the world is being defaulted upon. I'm more concerned about just the general feeling of hopelessness people have, and that tends to create extremist governments around the world. And one of the things that I do when I'm investing and not trading is I like to buy companies that have English as their primary language. So I want to own things in the United States, in Canada, Australia, New Zealand's not even a player, United Kingdom, Israel. Those are where you want to own because you have a consistency in terms of the rule of law, patent enforcement, property rights, and things of that nature. And all high tech comes from those countries. China is a follower, not a leader. And Taiwan and Japan have some good products, but they tend to not be public companies. So that's kind of how I look at it. And eventually what's going to happen here is they're not going to allow another Great Depression. So they're going to create an environment like what happened in the 40s or 70s, where they'd rather deal with inflation than deal with a deflationary collapse, because you can't really control a deflationary collapse. It's very disorderly, quicker than a inflationary, what do you call it, a Weimar kind of a thing. So the Weimar thing unwound over 6 or 7 years. The Great Depression happened in 3 or 4 months. So they're going to opt for inflation the best they can. And what they're going to try to do is, and I don't totally disagree with the policy, is they're going to reshore as much as they can. They're going to create an Instapot environment where you keep the velocity inside the country so you can generate tax revenue to pay for the deficits. And then you create a higher than normal inflation. And from there's some really good trades there for us too. So that's my expectation. They may get a sniff of deflation here, get people nervous, and then they're just going to turn on the floodgates. But they're also going to block a lot of cross-border trading and try to push more back in the United States.
You really think we're going to see that? Companies maybe leaving China and the Far East to come back to America?
It's already begun.
Really?
Already begun. Yeah.
Wow.
So you're gonna see an acceleration, especially if G does something stupid, or more stupid than what he has been
It's only
doing.
a matter of time with him. I mean, look, he's already got rid of his defense minister. He got rid of two generals, some cabinet officials on top of that. I mean, there's already internal strife in there. And I'm hearing that in the eastern part of China, he's having a hard time controlling the people.
Yeah, so, and also his foreign minister, quote unquote, died of a heart attack. So,
Yeah, I know exactly.
yeah, look, the Western provinces aren't are Muslim, and if he starts losing control of the Western, areas, there are a lot of commodities are there. But there's a north-south divide in China too, and so basically what's called the rice belt versus the wheat belt in China. And so those are different mindsets down there. There's a reason why Shanghai became extremely entrepreneurial. Beijing's more conservative. It's not a monolith over there. He's been rapidly trying to kill off his competitors, but there's a Xi Jinping versus I forget the other Peng, I think is the other guy. So those are the two big factions. There's Mandarins in that country. Xi has to contend with the people behind the scenes too. He can't start killing everybody off because remember, these are family dynasties. At some point, generals will rise up or they'll just split the country. So it's going to be really interesting. And remember, all the water comes from the south to the north, okay? Because the north is drier than the south. So there's a lot of games that can be played over there. It's just that it's unlike our country. We have our issues, right? We have the urban elites and we have the flyover country, but people moved around so much in this country that it's we're a little bit more homogenized,
It's true.
and plus it's harder to control this country because you can do all the games you want to play, but you got to get the food from the center to the edges, and at some point the center is going to not let stuff get to the edges. So it's gonna be, we're gonna have a different problem than China, but China's gonna go down first.
When you say the food has to get from the center to the edges, are you foreseeing a food distribution problem and a growing problem that'll lead to some level of famine?
Well, in our country, not only no much so much famine, but in California, right? The Central Valley produces a bunch of food, right? What has to go through passes to get to LA, right? And so you can envision problems like that. If people wanted to cause issues in the country, stuff has to get on rail from California all the way to Chicago.
Right.
How hard is it for people to tear up railroad tracks, right? Or to put cars in front of them or derail them? I mean, you could just I you know the imagination can simply run wild here in terms of being able to cause disruption. So, they've been very fortunate in this country that, the what I would call the right of center people have not done what they always accuse them of doing, right? It's the left that's been going crazy. But if they do push the right people in the middle of the country to a point where they have no hope, well, the
Yeah.
left will starve because we're all stuck in cities,
Well, that's an interesting thought. I hadn't even considered that, but you're right. Where the food is grown and where the elites live, you're exactly right. What about terrorism, though? I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, the FBI has issued a warning now to several cities to watch out for terrorists that we've let walk across our unguarded border. What do you see going on there, and how will that impact our economy?
unless it's nuclear related, or if it's like a mass casualty, like a chemical attack or biological attack, it won't have any impact whatsoever because we're too big. It'd just be annoyance. But if it's one of those things where like somebody poisons the drinking water in LA and 100,000 people die, well then yeah, we'll be in big trouble. So I'm not sure what comes across. Iran concerns me because they're the people, the adherents to the Shia religion, firmly believe that the 12th Mahdi is the one that's going to usher in the end of the world, if you will.
Yes.
And so they would love to hasten the end of the world so the 12th Mahdi would come. So, you know, they're not rational actors like Saudi Arabia. You know, the Sunnis are, they're practical people. Okay. Russia, he's a practical dictator. Xi Jinping, practical dictator. They actually want a world to run. Okay. Hardcore Shia don't really want a world to run. They want a new world to come. And you know, and that's what you can't negotiate with that.
Right.
You have to eliminate it. And so that's a big problem. And
But I think
ironically,
we're, Bob, I think we're lucky though. I think a lot of the Muslims aren't into the hardcore stuff. I know, for example, I've looked into Iran and the Iranian people hate their government, and they're only going to follow that government so far.
yeah, I mean, that's what they're hoping to do. I live out here in California where I think there's 1 million people from Persia. They hate that. They hate the regime. But look, I mean, look what just happened. You know, Israel is banging on Hamas really hard here. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, UAE, and Jordan not voted against boycotting Israel and cutting ties with. So, you know, because they fear the Shia regime, okay? So they're, you know, the play is hopefully you get enough. I have construction going on, I'm sorry. Hopefully you get enough people in that country and make it destabilizing enough that they take those people out, you know, before something really happens. But yeah, so that's the big problem, you know, in the world. But but it's kind of like everywhere now. People, you know, in this country here, people have lost hope. You know, in China, they call it they called it the lay down, now they call it the get out, right? The young people in that country have quit on communism. They just quit. And I've always told people the opposite of love isn't hate. The opposite of love is indifference.
Yes.
And that's what's happening here too. People are indifferent. Like I have a 22-year-old daughter, has a great job. She just moved out. She's doing everything, but she hates our government. She doesn't consider herself a Democrat or Republican. She just hates that this entity has such control over her day-to-day life, you
Well, I think
know?
that's a pretty universal feeling, and I think it's well deserved.
Yeah, but the thing is, they fight differently than you and I did, right? We shifted. We were the Ron Reagan Republicans, right? She's like, I'm not even voting. I don't care. I don't do anything. You know, she gets pulled over. She tells the cop, "Don't you have better things to do?" Literally, "Don't you have better things to do than to bother me?" A quote. You know, so that's how these people feel about authority. You know, just stay away from me. Leave me alone. You're not helping me at all. In fact, you're making my life harder. And so, you know, it's very interesting because I think the way that Democrats and Republicans are fighting, they're totally not reading the room at all.
Well, I look at, we have more of a uniparty problem than we have a Democrat Republican problem. That's how I'm beginning to, I mean, I'll give you an example in Arizona, and this also happened in the Senate with Mitch McConnell, Ron McDaniel, the head of the RNC, where funding was pulled from what they perceived to be America First candidates. And eight senators were affected by that in 2022. And in Arizona, Carrie Lake was discriminated against by hardcore GOP that are really uniparty people. But you know, I think what's going to happen with these young people, Bob, if it goes on long enough, this apathy, if they can't run from it, it's going to turn to anger, and that's where we're going to really have problems.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think when unemployment becomes a lot more prevalent, then I think the anger comes. Look, we just imported 5 million people in this country that have no skills. I'm not upset about them, but we brought the wrong people into the country. And what are they going to do? They're going to take services away from poor people. They're going to take jobs away from poor people. And then automation is taking jobs away from people. And then you have in the cities, you don't have freedom of purchase anymore. Everything's a big vending machine. You go into CVS and in some of these urban cities, you're going into like an 80,000 square foot vending machine. You're paying for the stuff before it comes out of that plexiglass. You know what I'm saying?
I know. And you're also paying for the random theft that's going on in blue cities that's not prosecuted. I hear what you're saying. But listen, the people that have come into our country, and I'm not talking terrorists or criminals, because there certainly are those, but most of the people that come here, they just want the American life. But you know what? It's going to take a generation for this problem to fix itself. That's how I see it. And I don't know if we have a generation.
No, I agree. You know, I'm not that pessimistic, but we definitely, I think, are going to go through a 2-year realignment. And Things aren't going to get better really, Dave, until I think it's 10 years from now, maybe 12,
That's what I
where
think too.
there's less baby boomers than there than before.
Well, the baby boomers have caused a lot of the economic problems we have just because of sheer numbers. Social Security drain and all the drain that's there, it's because this is the largest group retiring, and this puts pressure on the people behind us to pay for us to come through this.
Yeah, I blame the politicians because they knew about this problem 30 years ago.
Oh,
They could have adjusted everything back then, but that's not politicians aren't known for their foresight. They're experts at hindsight.
Well, they're experts at the next election and how to get elected and to hell with the long term. I agree. Okay, but with all this negativity that we have, and there are some things I think that we're going to recover from, but I wanted to ask you a couple questions about the war, and then I want to turn back to opportunities in our country. I don't see Russia or China being able to come into the Middle East conflict unless they use ICBMs. I don't think they can maintain it militarily. What do you think?
Yeah, they don't have the logistical, support to do that. Yeah, and it's interesting. Yeah, the only way Russia's coming in is through Ezekiel 38, and it'll be demise to them. So I think they're going to support behind the scenes. China can't do anything. I think that, they have 18 warships that could make it across. By the time they get there, every ship would be sunk if they're going to come try to do something. So it's really everybody's pushing behind Iran. And look, I don't think Israel, was sad that this happened to their people, because I think if you look at it, at some point they had to get rid of Hamas, and this presented a perfect opportunity to do so. And they're going to get rid of, because look, they 5 more years from now, if Iran got nuclear weapons, okay, and if Iran got nuclear weapons and Hamas gets, a stronger rockets, I mean, Israel could be in a situation where it's existential threat to, right? Their existence is threatened, if I could say the word the correct way. And they may have to do strategic bombing. And then you're looking at hundreds of thousands of people dead. So, this is a war that unfortunately looks like it had to be fought. And but we don't know the outcome from this, because a lot of countries where they imported a lot of people from that part of the world are trying to be politically active, and also being, look at New York City tearing down American flags, beating up on people in
I've seen
London. They
that,
took over the
yeah.
city. So this is a very interesting environment. I don't know if it calms down. I think it will, only because the once this thing is laid waste in Gaza, if you notice Hezbollah, I think they saw what they did in Gaza and said, Israel's not screwing around this time, because they literally will lay waste to Lebanon. Okay, they have the ability to strategically destroy the country, and they were already told Iran and Syria, our first rockets are going to Damascus and Tehran, not Beirut. So everybody backed off. And I think that's why he's been so aggressive in Gaza, just to show them their resolve. Now, I don't care what side of the fight you're on, I'm only speaking to what I see. And from a practical, point of view, that's why they're doing what they're doing. It's hard for me to believe that their intelligence didn't know this was coming,
I agree.
But we're past that now. And so here we are in the middle of it all. And you notice it's not affecting oil yet, because the Saudis behind the scenes are cheering, okay? Because they fear Iran, desperately. The Gulf states fear Iran. People don't realize Eastern Saudi Arabia is a higher Shia population than Sunni population, okay? And where all the oil is in Eastern Saudi Arabia. So there's a lot of things. What you see is not always what you get. And that's why I always tell people, and people, on Twitter and all these other places are so simplistic. People just need to dig under the covers a little bit, listen more to your show, kind of understand really what's really happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, I agree with you about Saudi Arabia totally. They're a better ally to the United States than Biden is trying to let them be. And I think Biden's just counterproductive in this whole thing. We'd be better off if he just shut up and just supplied Israel with the military hardware they need and go away.
Well, he has a problem. Obama and Valerie Jarrett are Iranian
I know. I
supervisors.
know.
So,
I know.
yeah, it's just, he's just lucky that he has a bunch of Jewish people in his cabinet, and then the Congress is pro-Saudi, not pro-Iran, where he wouldn't have done anything.
You know, if there's a positive thing that can come out of this, though, I'm hoping at some point in time, this will allow the opportunity for the Iranian people to rise up and overtake their government, because once and for all, because the Iranian people, I think, are good people. I mean,
Oh,
I've
yeah.
had a lot of interaction. They don't like what's going on. A lot of them like to come here and live because they appreciate what we have. And I just would like to see them overthrow that government. You know, Bob, I remember when we had a soccer team after 9/11 play in Iran. And it was against the government wishes, but they went ahead and had a memorial and a moment of remembrance for 9/11 before they played the soccer game. And I just said, those are good people. Those are people that care about humanity. And that's why I don't like to categorize Iran as all being evil. They're not. Their government's evil, is evil as hell. And do you think that Netanyahu is going to be able to dislodge that government? Because I don't think he'll be safe until they do.
I'm not sure. Well, we'll see what happens. When the war broke out, there was a soccer match in Tehran, internal one, and some Hamas sympathizers planted the Palestinian flag in the middle of the pitch, and the whole stadium was basically F Hamas, F Hamas, F Hamas. So, there's no love there between these people, and especially they know the regime, and that was their way of being able to tell the regime how much they hate them without really telling the regime how much they hate them. But look, I think, look, most totalitarian states die of their own weight,
I
and
agree.
I think that'll happen there too. And look, if Iran pushes too hard, they're just going to lose their ability to export oil, and then they have nothing.
And that affects Russia. So, because of the BRICS concept.
Yeah, well, Russia would love it because Russia and Saudi Arabia oil would go through the roof. So, just like was a den of thieves, right? They don't all have they're not all pulling on the same boat. If Iran goes under, price of oil skyrockets, right? Guess who wins? United States, Saudi Arabia, and Russia. So, it's not like, hey, I got you, brother. It's more like I only got you so far.
I hear you.
So it's these things are interesting to me. That's why I'm so glad I live in the United States.
Yeah, well, me too. Although, yeah, we need some much needed reform on who's
Yeah.
running things. But anyway, that aside, I do agree with you. Fundamentally, this is a great place to be. I want to go back to opportunities for our audience, because in the midst of all this chaos that we're experiencing, this malice, cultural revolution, all the other stuff we're going through, there's still light at the end of the tunnel for people that want to dig and find it. And I think your company is one of the shining lights in that. So let's close with telling people how they can find out more and how they can be involved in something that's going to put extra money in their pocket.
Yeah, go to Dave Loves Trading. That's the site we set up for you. Get the Black Friday specials. You could trade stocks, you could trade crypto, you could trade futures options with us, join our VIP room. And if you just happen to go to tradelikeagenius.com and you buy anything in the room, make sure you tell them you came from this show so you get the best discount, and also that we could support Dave's efforts here by having me on. And
Well,
you only have a couple of weeks to take advantage of these specials. These are the best prices of the year. And people that are subscribers already, this is when you want to renew. Take advantage of the great pricing. We've done this every year since we've been in existence, and people seem to like the pricing. It's really good pricing. And like I said, what you get out of the trade, what you get out of this, you'll make more money trading than you will paying for the service. So
Yeah, by
definitely.
far. I get that too from people that have come from my show to what you do at Trade Genius. That's exactly what they say. It made almost no time to make up that money before they're making money and they're doing really well. Listen, people, this is better than a second income, because you can, it's more money and you're going to basically set your own hours. Bob, it's a great service you provide, but I appreciate you coming on too and sharing your background and expertise on what's going on in the world economically, because it's good to get a different view other than the White House press secretary. So I do appreciate you coming on, Bob. Thanks so much.
That's not a big hill to climb, but thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I just want to say, hey, ladies and gentlemen, take advantage of this. Go to DaveLovesTrading.com. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Have a good one.